ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Text Number 16. Aniyatam vetram asmakam ayashaskara kula angarasya durbudhe chaturta asya udita dhamma. Aniyatham are vetram asmakam ayashaskaram kulangarasya durbudesh chaturtho syodito damam Aniyathamare vetram asmakam ayashaskaram kulangarasya durbudesh chaturtho syodito damam Aniyathamare vetram Asmakam ayashaskaram kulangarasya durbudesh chaturtho syodito dhamma.
Please chant. Ladies, please.
Thank you.
Durbudesh. Anyatam, let it be brought. Are, O, Vitram, the stick. Asmakam, of us. Ayashaskara, who is bringing defamation. Kula Angarasya, of he who is like a cinder in the dynasty. Durbude, having bad intelligence. Chaturta, the fourth. Asya, for him. Uditha, declared. Dhammaha, punishment. The stick. Argumentum ad baculum. That's not Sanskrit, that's Latin. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. So one of the teachers of Prahlad Maharaj is now become angry, and he is expressing his complete exasperation with little Prahlad, and so he says, oh, please bring me a stick. This Prahlad is damaging our name and fame. Because of his bad intelligence, he has become like a cinder in the dynasty of the demons. Now he needs to be treated by the fourth of the four kinds of political diplomacy. So that's the use of the stick or force. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In political affairs, when a person disobediently agitates against the government, four principles are used to suppress him. One, legal orders. Two, pacification. Three, the offer of a post. Or finally, weapons. When there are no other arguments, he is punished. In logic, this is called argumentum ad baculum. When the two seminal Brahmins, Sanda and Amarka, failed to extract from Prahlad Maharaj the cause of his having opinions different from those of his father and everybody else there, they called for a stick with which to chastise him to satisfy their master, Hiranyakashipu. Because Prahlad had become a devotee, they considered him to be contaminated by bad intelligence and to be the worst descendant in the family of demons. As it is said, where ignorance is bliss, it is folly to be wise. So that's exactly what that whole kingdom is about. Nothing but a kingdom of ignorance. So Prahlad is the only wise person. So as it says, it is folly to be wise, but not for a pure devotee on the level of Prahlad Maharaj. Actually, it's wise to be wise for him, and that's exactly what he's doing. He's courageous, he's fearless, he states the truth as it is, pretty just as much as Srila Prabhupada used to do, not caring for what effect or what result would occur due to his speaking out in a place which would be obviously opposed to everything that he said. In a society or family in which everyone is a demon, for someone to become a Vaishnav is certainly folly. Thus, Prahlad Maharaj was charged with bad intelligence because he was among demons, including his teachers, who were supposedly Brahmins. The members of our Krishna consciousness movement are in a position similar to that of Prahlad Maharaj. All over the world, 99% of the people are godless demons, and therefore, our preaching of Krishna consciousness, following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, is always hampered by many impediments. Because of their fault of being devotees, The American boys who have sacrificed everything for preaching Krishna consciousness are charged with, listen to this, being members of the CIA. Moreover, we were having a very wonderful effect upon many, many people throughout the world, and there started to become some suspicion on us that we were really not who we said we are and did what we were doing, but this was all a front for the CIA or the FBI or the Secret Service in order to extract information for either from American intelligence or Indian intelligence, whatever. But they could not believe who we were. That was at least the prevailing sentiment of some of the government officials, not all, of course. Moreover, the seminal Brahmins in India, who say that one can become a Brahmin only if born in a Brahmin family, charge us with ruining the Hindu system of religion. I have a misprint here. Of course, the fact is that one becomes a Brahmin by qualification. Because we are training Europeans and Americans to become qualified and are awarding them Brahminical status, we are being charged with destroying the Hindu religion. Nonetheless, confronting all kinds of difficulties, we must spread the Krishna consciousness movement with great determination, like that of Prahlad Maharaj. In spite of being the son of a demon, Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad never feared the chastisements of the seminal Brahmin sons of a demoniac father. Omaginati merandasyaganjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Yes. So we see Prahlad Maharaj, from external point of view, is in what we might call a position of hot water. His father did not particularly like the way that he answered him when Hiranyakashipu asked him, what is the best of knowledge that you have learned from your teachers? And then Prahlad Maharaj answered that, as far as I have learned from my spiritual master, any person who has accepted a temporary body and temporary household life is certainly embarrassed by anxiety because of having fallen into a dark well where there is no water but only suffering. One should give up this position and go to the forest, the vana. More clearly, one should go to Vrindavan, where only Krishna consciousness is prevalent, and should thus take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is what started this problem. In effect, Prahlad Maharaj was telling his father, you're in Maya. You really got a problem, Dad. It's terrible. You should just leave your kingdom, leave your wife, leave me, your son, leave your other sons, and just go to the forest, search out a guru, and try to achieve God realization by, and here's the clincher, taking shelter of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Your most, in your opinion, in your false notion, terrible enemy. What he thinks. In other words, Prahlad Maharaj was saying, he's really not your enemy. He's the one who can redeem you. He's the one who can relieve you. He's the one who can help you. He can benefit you. But Hiranyakashipu considered him a demon, considered Lord Vishnu an enemy. Why? Because Lord Vishnu killed his brother, Hiranyaksha. And Hiranyaksha and him, they were buddy-buddy. They were friends, companions. So he was bereft of his brother. And he vowed with vengeance that I will please and satisfy the spirit of my deceased brother by killing this Lord Vishnu. And of course, that was the basis for him to perform those severe austerity, such as standing on his toes for many, many hundreds of years, with the intention of gaining all sorts of powers, materialistic powers, by which he felt and thought that he could kill Lord Vishnu. That was his motivation. And now here his little son, 5 years old, is saying, go and take shelter of the Supreme Lord Vishnu and get God realized and know that you're not the Lord. He's the Lord. Now, can you imagine you're a father or a mother and somebody's talking, your little child is talking to you in a way which is completely deviant in that particular society there? So it was a surprise, but Hiranyakashipu did not take it too seriously at that time because it was the first time that he had heard Prahlad, his son, speak in that what he considered impertinent manner. So he told the teachers, Sunda and Amarka, who were the sons of what is that? Shukracharya, thank you. He was the sons of Shukracharya. And he told them, you should guard my child more carefully and more thoughtfully. Because how could he speak this way unless our enemies were getting into the Gurukul? Possibly by disguising themselves as children, but really they are demigods. And they're trying to influence my son so that then he could influence everybody else and everybody will be against me. So you please watch them very, very carefully. Watch him very carefully and make certain that his... make sure that he is well guarded and that he does not express such blasphemous ideas as this. So this was a threat to the two teachers' false prestige. It was in jeopardy. I mean, after all, think about it. These two teachers have the most prestigious teaching job in the world. They were teaching the king of the material world, namely Hiranyakashipu's son. I mean, to get to teach this prince is a very elevated, very exalted position, a job that any teacher would crave for, would aspire for. And here, their boss, Hiranyakashipu, is throwing some water, dirty water on them, in effect, by saying, what are you teaching them? Look what my boy is talking. So their false prestige is being threatened. It's being shaken. And since they, although Brahmins, are what we call Dvija Bandhu Brahmins, those who are twice born and not liberated, but bound up to this material world, bound up to their body. When you're bound up to your body, you think of your false prestige. You think of who's glorifying you, who's adoring you, who's shaming you. In the material world, everyone has come for one purpose. That is primarily to enjoy, mainly for enjoyment. In the Bhagavatam, it is mentioned when Queen Puranjani was lamenting the death of her husband, King Puranjana, And a Brahmin approached her, who was none other than Lord Vishnu. And he said, "My dear friend, even though you cannot immediately recognize me, can't you remember that in the past you had a very intimate friend? Unfortunately, you gave up my company to accept a position as an enjoyer of this material world. That's why you're crying. That's why you're miserable. That's why you're full of grief. Because you gave up my company. And what did that company consist of? Service. Loving service. Caring service. Surrendered service. Devoted service. So you gave that up to come to the material world to enjoy it, to become an owner, a proprietor, to become a friend of everyone, to have everyone look up to you, and now you're lamenting." So this is the same thing that these two teachers are afflicted by, called the skin disease. And I don't mean dermatitis either. I mean skin disease, meaning they are identifying themselves with their material body as themselves. And because they, like everyone else, has come into this world to become an enjoyer, to become a proprietor, to become a friend of everyone. In other words, to expand this false ego. The false ego meaning, I am this body, and everything that is connected with my body, whether it's my car, whether it's my home, whether it's my wife, whether it's my children, whether it's my airplane, my home, my country, my city, my community, all that is a part of me, and thus I identify with it as me. So that's the mentality of the materialist. And they, being those two teachers, being identified with their own body, considered that their body was somewhat in jeopardy now. Because after all, Hiranyakasipu said, "What are you teaching these, my child?" So they were frightened, they were upset, they were disturbed. And for this reason, they said to Prahlad Maharaj, they said, "Who has taught you this deviant knowledge? Where did you learn this? Come on now, tell me. We want to know the truth." So Prahlad Maharaj simply says, "I have gotten this information from my spiritual master. And from this spiritual master, I have learned something very important, something that I'm seeing right now." He says, he taught me that in this world, people regard others as friends and enemies, all on the basis of the physical body. And I am seeing this now happening in you, my teachers. You're looking at me as if I'm an enemy because I'm speaking in a glorifying way about the so-called enemy, Lord Vishnu, who is actually nothing more than your well-wisher. He actually did a good thing when he killed Hiranyaksha. Hiranyaksha was a criminal. He was stealing gold from the earth. He took it out, and what happened is the earth became unbalanced. And the result of the earth being unbalanced, it began to tilt and fell and then plunged down into the Garbhodak Ocean, where it sat on the bottom. And the Lord, at the behest or the pleas of the demigods, went down and lifted it up. But in throwing the earth down into the... millions of people were killed. There were people on the earth. But Hiranyaksha couldn't care less about people dying as long as he got the gold, as long as he got the pleasure, as long as he could make nice ornaments out of all this gold. That's all his concern was. This is demoniac mentality. Kill him, kill her, kill him, as long as I get mine. Unfortunate. So this is criminal mentality. And the Lord had to get rid of such a criminal, and he did do that. Of course, he got a little fun out of it. Remember that one of the reasons that Jai and Vijay, who were the doorkeepers of the seventh gate in the Vaikuntha planet, one of the Vaikuntha planets, one of the reasons that they were cursed by the Kumaras is that the Lord wanted it so that he could come down and fight with somebody. Because after all, everyone is just honoring him and glorifying him, adoring him, applauding him, serving him. You know, who wants to fight with such a beautiful, loving Lord? Nobody wants to fight with God. So what he had to do is he had to give some service to his two devotees, namely Jai and Vijay, had them cursed. They came into, actually it was a Brahmin family. Kashyapa Muni was the father, and then there was Diti was the mother. And nonetheless, I won't go into the details, but they were born at a very inauspicious time. That's when they came, and the result of this inauspiciousness was that two demons were born to Diti. So the idea being is that eventually the Lord would get the opportunity to flex his muscles, get into a crouch, and start wrestling with whom? His devotees. That's a privilege. That's an opportunity for any devotee to be able to wrestle with the Lord. Even though you get killed by him, what could even be better than that? To be killed by God? And only good could come from it. So that was a privilege, that was an esteemed benefit which Hiranyaksha got. And it was a nice fight, went on for a little while. And then the Lord, feeling that he had gotten his fun, his play, his relief, all he did is he took his hand and gave it a little clap on the ear. Boom, end. No more Hiranyaksha. Yeah, it was all for fun, all for play. Like when two wrestlers who don't hate each other, but they love the sport of wrestling, get together and they fight, but just for fun, for sport. So therefore, that is what happened there. And coming back to Sunda and Amarka, they again identifying themselves with their body and their kingdom, and their king felt very much fearful. So they threatened Prahlad Maharaj. They chastised him, as we will see in coming pages. They chastised him, reproved him. They threatened him. They took a stick. It doesn't say that they hit him with a stick, but very, very possibly. But we know that Prahlad Maharaj would not be affected even if he were hit by a stick, because after all, a little bit later on, Hiranyakashipu has his attendants take a trident and try to plunge it into the skin of his son, and it just doesn't go in. It's like plunging it into a stone. So he was protected. As Krishna says, those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. So Prahlad Maharaj was not afraid of his teachers. He was not afraid of his father. The only one he could fear would be the Supreme Lord Vishnu, whom he knew was all-powerful. So he not only feared him, but he loved him. Both feared him because he was so powerful, he had all opulences, no one could defeat him, but loved him because he was so merciful, so kind, so affectionate. He had given Prahlad Maharaj real knowledge, true knowledge, which he saw all of these other persons in the kingdom did not have. They were all an illusion. And all he did is feel sorry for them. And what did he do? He preached when he was at the Gurukul. He didn't spend his time in frivolous games. In fact, he discouraged everyone else from engaging in those games. He says, don't waste your time. You never know when you're going to die. You may die in 5 minutes, 5 years, 50 years. Nobody knows. And if you die, you'll just come back and be miserable again. Your parents will tell you, don't do this, do this, don't do this, do this. And as you get up, grow older, you'll be in situations where there'll be so much distress of your body, the physical body, distress of the mind, distress from other living entities, Ariyatmaka, Aribodhika, distress from the demigods, which wreak havoc sometimes through earthquakes, floods, hurricanes, and the like. So he's telling his playmates, don't waste your time. Worship the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Take shelter of him. Adore him. Glorify him. Chant his holy name, And if you do that, you will feel a joy, a happiness, a fulfillment that you cannot get from your play activities. And we know that because he used to go around even by himself just chanting, whether it was Hare Krishna or Om Namo Narayan, he was chanting the Lord's name. And in chanting the name over and over and over again, he would get such bliss, such pleasure, such happiness, and such fulfillment. So when a devotee is so overwhelmed with happiness, the nature of transcendental happiness is that it doesn't want to keep itself to itself. It wants to share, it wants to give, it wants to spread. As we saw Srila Prabhupada, he came here simply and only to spread Krishna consciousness. He could have stayed in Vrindavan and just stayed in his samadhi and experienced his own transcendental bliss continuously in a very deep and a very concentrated way. This is not to say that Srila Prabhupada was not blissful when he was here. He was. But when you are alone and you can just focus and concentrate, the intensity, of course, becomes greater and greater. But he sacrificed that for us so that we could experience the glories, the joys, the happiness of pure, loving, devotional service. This was his sacrifice. And we can validate his being here by always remembering that he sacrificed so much the last 11 years of his life so that we could know real happiness, true happiness, the kind that Prahlad Maharaj is talking about. This is a happiness that no one can ever take from you. It is real, it is true, it is forever. It exists in the heart and it comes directly from the pleasure that we give to the Supreme Lord through our service. That pleasure that he receives, he expresses back to the devotee, into the soul. He infuses it and the soul becomes filled with it. And when the soul becomes filled with it, illusions disappear. Sinful reactions become eradicated. And the true understanding of why we are here, what the purpose of life is, what we should do with our time, and how we should, how we can become ever increasingly happy. All this is given to us through the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So we have so much to be thankful for through him. So Prahlad Maharaj takes the same stand that Srila Prabhupada did. He said, don't listen to all these demons. In which they talk about friend and enemy. And Srila Prabhupada expounds very strongly on this principle of friend and enemy. You can only have friends and enemies if you're identifying yourself with your material body as yourself. Who is our friend in that consciousness? Well, anyone who will flatter me, who will promote me, my sense gratification, who will increase my sense pleasure, who will adore me. Yes. And you're my friend. Because I'm in this world to increase, to expand, to inflate my false ego. And you're helping that. And whoever deflates my false ego, decreases it, reduces it, you're my enemy. Because I've come here to feel like a lord. I've come here to feel like a powerhouse. And when you start speaking in a way which is opposed to me, which puts me down, which makes me feel like 2 cents, so to speak, well then, you're deflating me. You're defeating the very purpose for which I've come. And now I don't feel like a lord. So that was Sanda and Amarka. They weren't, their position was being reduced as a result of the way that Prahlad Maharaj was speaking to his father and speaking to all the other children. So Prahlad Maharaj is the wonderful and great, glorious example for us. To take shelter of the Supreme Lord. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar of Instruction what such a spiritual master, what are his qualities? He mentions those qualities. They don't seem to be coming. So I was hoping that they would come flowing into my mind. There are 5 very, very beautiful qualities that a pure devotee should have. But anyway, there are other qualities that I would like to mention. And that a devotee has to develop faith. Deep faith in his spiritual master and deep faith in the Supreme Lord. Deep faith in devotional service. He has to have hope. Hope that the Lord is watching. Hope that the Lord is guiding him and directing him. And that he will ultimately, truly, not only perform devotional service for the pleasure of the Lord, by the grace of the Lord, but that he ultimately will meet with the Lord and have association with the Supreme Lord. He has to have that hope. And that has to spur him, drive him. Because who wouldn't want to be with the Supreme Lord? I mean, Arjuna close to the Supreme Lord. And so many persons during the time that Krishna was on the planet. This is such a great blessing. It's such a great grace. All the gopis, Nanda Maharaj and so forth. Faith and hope. And charity. Another quality. Giving and giving more. And knowing that we still owe because we have received so much. We can never give enough, and we should never pat ourselves on the back because we have given this, given that. No, we owe so much because Krishna is giving us food and clothing and shelter and health and strength and guidance and direction and books and medicine and so many things so that we are enabled to be able to push on in our devotional service. So we owe so much. And he has forgiven us for so many sins, so many offenses, so many crimes, so many problems that we have committed or had. He's forgiven us for that. Just for all those sins we owe so much. That Krishna is so merciful. We need to be patient. Patience is so important. We desire to achieve that closeness, that presence with the Supreme Lord. But we need to have that patience and steadiness. And also, we need to develop this self-control. And obedience to higher authorities. If we don't have obedience, then there can be no development of humility, which is the source of all the different virtues. Humility is such an important position. So obedience to authorities. Everyone here has some authority. The ultimate authority for us is Srila Prabhupada. So we need to follow those teachings. Come to the programs. Develop the different virtues. Read this Bhagavatam. Chant Hare Krishna. Follow the four regulative principles. All of these things. We need to develop the courage, which is important. To go forth in Krishna consciousness, even though so many people are not Krishna conscious. We need to have the discrimination to know what is useful, what is not useful. What is valuable, what is not valuable. These are all spiritual qualities which enable us to progress and to move forward and to advance in Krishna consciousness. And ultimately, we need to be able to detach ourselves from those things which we love, but which will be gone eventually. And if you fall in love with something or someone that will be gone, you will simply be miserable. We need to see everyone and everything as part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And that all of our love has to be reposed in Krishna and all his pure devotees who are here not only now but forever. So those are the wonderful qualities. What I was thinking of before is that the devotee realizes he's an eternal servant of the Lord. He loses interest in everything except promoting Krishna consciousness and spreading Krishna consciousness. He's always thinking of Krishna. He's always trying to figure out new ways to spread the Krishna consciousness movement and to get the holy name in people's ears and mouth. And he understands that his only business is to spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. This is a pure devotee. Such a person should be recognized as an Uttama Adhikari. And the Uttama Adhikari, the advanced Uttama Adhikari, should be accepted as a bona fide spiritual master. So this is where we all have to set our sights. We all should do this in a mood of appreciation. a mood of gratitude, a mood of love to Srila Prabhupada, to the deities, and to all the devotees who are complimenting or helping, assisting us in our devotional service. If we have this mood of great gratitude instead of envy or condescension or patronization, but a mood of affection, a mood of encouraging others, a mood of enthusiasm, enthusing others, and seeing the good qualities of others. You can see the bad ones, but we are not to dwell upon them. You need to see the bad because sometimes they have qualities you don't want to be associated with. But we don't dwell on those, we look at the good qualities. And in that, we will grow and we will develop and we will receive all the blessings from the great acharyas, from Srila Prabhupada, and even, yes, Prahlad Maharaj, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you so much. Are there any questions that I may have, confused a few persons here, maybe? No confusion? Or is this everybody's too hungry? Go to prasadam. That's it. Okay, if you have the question, I'll be across the street to answer questions while the prasadam is coming. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.